In our last lesson, we left off on page 18. We had read Genesis 15, 5, and 6 in regards to the stars as indicative of Abram's seed. That's important because the stars that are being drawn by Satan are Jews. We'll come to that later. Now, we'll go ahead with verse 9. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed yet a dream. This is Joseph dreaming. And behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars made obeisance to me. Now that's what I read very hurriedly at the end of the last tape that you need to know about. Only 11 stars are in the dream, because Joseph is the 12th himself. Verse 10. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee to the earth? Now look at Jeremiah 31, because the zodiac is Israel's guarantee. Thus saith Jehovah, who giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night. Not the stars and the moon, but the ordinances that keep the things in relationship. Who stirreth up the sea so that the waves thereof roar. Jehovah of hosts is his name. If these ordinances depart from before me, saith Jehovah, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. So the very existence of the zodiac is a guarantee to Israel. Now look at Deuteronomy 7:6. For thou art a holy people unto Jehovah thy God. Jehovah thy God hath chosen thee to be a people for his own possession, above all peoples that are upon the face of the earth. Now that's pretty blank plain. That he has chosen them above all peoples that are upon the face of the earth. Hosea 11:1. When Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Those of you familiar with this verse, because we've used it in the Passover and Discourse 3. It's a very important verse, and it has a double meaning, and we took that up back in Discourse 3. Because of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God chose Israel to be his own possession above all peoples that are on the face of the earth. Jehovah called Israel his son. For this reason, Jesus told the Jews to pray, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Jesus did not teach this prayer to Gentiles. The Jews, in figure, are referred to as the stars. Anti-Semitism began a long time ago. Not that people hate the Jews, they hate the God of the Jews. And that is the real crux of the situation. They take it out on the Jews because that's the only way they can take it out on God. So they take it out on the Jews, hence anti-Semitism. Now look at Daniel 8, 9 and 10. Out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and some of the host and of the stars it cast down to the ground and trampled upon them. I wanted you to see that the stars represent Jews. See, look at that verse 10 again. I think it's very plain. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and some of the host and of the stars it cast down to the ground. Exactly the same thing. Look at Revelation 12. Another sign was seen in the heaven. Behold, a great dragon, red as fire, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems. And his tail is dragging the third of the stars of heaven, and he cast them into the earth. And the dragon has stood and still stands inside of the woman, namely the future one to bring forth, in order that at the time she might bring forth, he might devour her child. So he's dragging the stars, and it tells you from the Old Testament in Daniel, the stars represent Israelis. Now, this asterisk that comes down, the dragon is dragging. That's important. Is dragging. Present tense. That right there. The third of the stars of the heaven in the day of John's writing. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to always do that. It means that he did it in John's writing. The dragon is always anti-Semitic. He said, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. Now, you had that already. With the establishment of the state of Israel, the conflict for the stars has been brought into plain view. The adversary, by whatever name you wish to call him, Satan, devil, Zeus, or Jupiter, he is very real. Here are two pieces of evidence that prove there is a very real conflict. Here's Jupiter. This is a neat picture. Mystery Religions in the Ancient World by Jocelyn Goodwin. Here is a picture of Zeus, or Jupiter. They're the same person, but Jupiter, Roman. He's inside the zodiac circle. And there's the Zeus eagle, dead giveaway up on top, or the Roman eagle, if you wish. And I can't tell, the print's too small. Jupiter, in the zodiac, 2nd century, this is under the picture, A.D., in the Vatican Museum. 2nd century, that's 100 in the hundreds, A.D., very, very early. And here's the Vatican Museum. Now, parallel to that, we have Jupiter on one side, we have Jehovah on the other. Jehovah, Israeli postage stamps, February the 27th, 1961, the constellations of the zodiac. So here are the 12 constellations of the zodiac, which Israel says belong to them. Jupiter says they belong to him. Zeus said, I will be like the Most High. I will put my throne above the stars. This is his whole bend, is to duplicate Jesus. That's what he's trying to really do, duplicate Jesus. And he's doing a good job of it, because people don't really know the difference. That's sad to true, but true. All right? Now, here's what the Babylonian Talmud, Barakat 32b, says. But Zion said, the Lord hath forsaken me, and the Lord hath forgotten me. Is not forsaken the same as forgotten? Resh Lakish said. The community of Israel said before the Holy One, blessed be he, Sovereign of the universe, when a man takes a second wife after his first, he still remembers the deeds of the first. Thou hast both forsaken me and forgotten me. The Holy One, blessed be he, answered her, My daughter, 12 constellations have I created in the firmament, and for each constellation I have created 30 hosts, and for each host I have created 30 legions, for each legion I have created 30 cohorts, for each cohort I have created 30 maniples, and for each maniple I have created 30 camps, and to each camp I have attached 365 thousands of myriads of stars corresponding to the days of the solar year, and all of them I have created only for thy sake. And thou sayest, thou hast forgotten me and forsaken me. Now that's what the Babylonian Talmud is teaching. That's what Scripture says in Jeremiah, I gave you that. It's the guarantee. And here is the nation of Israel after all these centuries with a zodiac on postage stamps in 1961. I think those are amazing proofs. Now come over to page 20. Consider another very important fact, often in the news. God does not only have a chosen people, but he also has a chosen land in which Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will live. Now that's future. We're not going to be up in heaven all the time. This stuff that we're going up to heaven and they're going to be always in heaven, that isn't true. Look carefully now. You'll see it isn't for yourself. Okay, there we go. God's call of Abraham. First promise of land, Genesis 12. Now Jehovah said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto the land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and be thou a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, and him that curseth thee will I curse. Boy, that puts it pretty plain where you stand if you hate the Jews. Now, Abraham wasn't a Jew. I don't want to give you that impression. He was the chosen one. He's the father of the Jews. He's the father of the Arabs, too. We'll come to that. In thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And the Canaanite was then in the land, and Jehovah appeared unto Abram and said, Unto thy seed will I give this land, and there builded he an altar unto Jehovah who appeared unto him. Now Abram visits the land. This is Genesis 13:14-18. Jehovah said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward, eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. Get that word? Forever. So you don't need to worry about this silly conference in Madrid, because ultimately it's going to Israel. And that's where it belongs. It's his land. You'll see in a minute. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then may thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it, in the breadth of it, for unto thee will I give it. And Abram moved his tent, and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Now before you read further, you have a fold-out picture comes here. Now, you can take a look at that. You can open it up for a minute, and maybe you color it, make it stand out better. I've got all the land territory colored green of the land grant, and then I've got the water around it blue. It makes it stand out real nicely, and I just did it very hurriedly, but it stands up. Now, let's go just a little bit further. Go up to the top of the page there, page 20, the second column. The land described. In that day Jehovah made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, and the Cadmonite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Rephaim, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. Now the land grant continues to Jacob. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came from Padanaram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And that's the first step. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave unto Abraham and to Isaac, and to thee will I give it. Say, to thee will I give it. And to thy seed after thee will I give the land. Now that is extremely important today, because it tells us plainly that this land was not given to the Arabs. He gave it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and not to Ishmael. Now, Leviticus 25:23, God says, the land is mine. And the land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine, for ye are strangers and sojourners with me. So now you're going to see trouble. Sooner or later, I don't know when, how soon, I wished I knew more, but sooner or later you're going to see devastation of an unparalleled magnitude. And that's what we're headed for. And we're headed there in a rush, too. I don't know, rush to us might mean 5 or 10 years, because we'll have to equate it with prophecies as we go. It could happen tomorrow, could happen several years away. But now, look at Acts 7. Then having gone out of the land of the Chaldeans, he resided in Haran, and thence after his father died, he resettled him into this land into which you yourselves are now residing. Now this is right after the birth of Christ, and the Jews are still there. Now, and he gave not to him inheritance in it, that is to Abraham, didn't give it to Abraham at all, it neither a foot's rostrum, and he promised to give to him with reference to a holding it down and to his seed after him, while not being to him a child. So you see, this is a promise that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are going to be there. Over there to the left, I put numbers 1, 2, and 3, make it plain that Israelis are the sojourners with God, not the Arabs. Scripture does not tell us where Abraham walked to view the land. A record of Abram's long walk was found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, found in Israel beginning in 1947. Now, I put from the Essene writings from Qumran a detail of Abram's walk. And it's worth your paying attention. Now, you'll have to see Apologetics 31, page 14, if you want the footnotes that explain some of this. I just didn't have room for all of this, and it's already covered back there in Apologetics 31. Now, here is from the Essene Writings from Qumran by DuPont Sumner in 1961. I will give all this land to thy seed. I'm sorry, I didn't begin at the beginning. And he said to me, I will give all this land to thy seed, and they shall inherit it forever. Now, I think that's plain. And I will multiply thy seed like the dust of the earth, which no man may count, neither shall thy seed be numbered. Arise, go, and depart, and see how great is the length of this land, and how great its width. For I will give it to thee and to thy seed after thee forever. And I, Abram, departed to travel and see the land. I began the journey from the river of Gihon, that's down by the Nile River down there. You'll see that's where the dark line is. And I went along the sea, that's the Mediterranean, going north now, see the arrow, I put the arrows there, until I came to the mountain of the bull. Now that's up around that Aleppo, goes around there, there's a mountain in there. And then I journeyed from the shore of this great sea of salt and went along the mountain of the bull eastward to the breadth, in the breadth of the land, until I came to the Euphrates River. Now, he didn't have to go very far. The Euphrates is right up there by Aleppo. It goes way up there, and that's where it started. And that black line follows the Euphrates down. Then I journeyed along the Euphrates till I came to the Red Sea in the east. Now, he's telling you a thing we need to know. The Red Sea in the east. That's this Persian Gulf that we're headed down into. Then I went along the Red Sea until I came to the Gulf of the Sea of Reeds. Now that's what we call the Arabian Sea, no less, out there, which issues from the Red Sea. Then I journeyed to the south until I came to the River Gihon. So he goes down along the south here. And finally, I returned. So he went down south and came up there. I've got the arrows and so forth till he came to the River Gihon, back to the Nile. Now, I grant you that we don't have the extreme details, we don't have compass points, but it looks to me like this is to be the final land of Israel. Now, that would make good sense, because this whole big area of land will blossom as a rose, and you'll need it for the agriculture to feed the many Jews who will be raised from the dead and stood here, plus some believing Gentiles who will also be there. I'd like to be there with them. 19. Finally, I returned and came to my house safe and sound, and I found all my people in good health. Then I departed and returned to the Oaks of Mamre, which is at Hebron, just northeast of Hebron, and there I built an altar. And I offered a burnt offering on this altar, an oblation to the Most High God. And there I ate and drank, and I and all my household. Now, I think it's nice to have that map fold in there like that. And if you don't like it, I do anyway. Okay, now let's go to the next page, 21. So God has a land, and anybody that touches his land is dealing with God. So they're going to be in real trouble. This peace conference is an impossibility. It isn't ever going to work. Might work temporarily if Shamir would be willing to make concessions, which will be horrible. I hate to see him make any, but sooner or later, God's going to bring all these nations to battle against Jerusalem. And we're going to face dire and disastrous days. Now, page 21. Even though the adversary had cast down one-third of the stars, and you had that, he was not satisfied. He had some success during Old Testament history. The dragon continued to stand in sight of the woman Israel. He knew that Israel would one day be brought forth, a fulfillment of all of God's promises, and this event he purposed to defeat at all costs. But God the Son came into the world in the body of flesh, in a body of flesh. In this body of flesh, he satisfied all of the things necessary, not only to redeem Israel, but to pay for the sins of the whole world. We have that in John 1. The Word was in the beginning, and the Word was with thee, God, and the Word was God. And the Word came to be flesh, and he tabernacled among us. And we beheld his glory, glory as of an only begotten, from the Father, full of favor and truth. The seventh saying from the cross was just the one word, just one word in Greek, tetelestai. I put it up there in Greek. You can learn to say it. It's very easy to say. T, that first letter is a T, then an E, then a T, then an E. Tet. But it goes with that next odd-looking letter is an L. Tet, tel. See? You can put a line up and down between that first E and the second T if you want. Tet, tel. And you put one after the L. And then it's an E and an S. S. And those two make a sound. And put one after the S between the L. That S you don't know very well. And a T. And A and an I. Tie. Tet, telestai. I've spelled it in English, so you have the comparison right there. It has been and is finished. Actual receipts have been found with tetelestai, paid in full, stamped on them. John 19. When therefore the Jesus took the sour wine, he said, it has been and is finished. There it is. And having reclined the head, he gave over the spirit. Now look to 1 John 2:2. And he himself is a propitiation concerning our sins, but not concerning ours only, but also concerning the total world. So there's enough provision made so that anybody who will may come. Jesus had warned Israel of things to come, both in parables and direct statements during his earthly ministry. The adversary, with all his well-placed ministers in the church, has hidden many of these prophecies by corrupting the translators for his purpose. First, consider some direct statements. Jesus warns Israel of uninterrupted anti-Semitism. Get that? Uninterrupted anti-Semitism. Then they will give you over into tribulation, talking to Jews. They will kill you, talking to Jews. And you will be being hated constantly. That's constantly, without interruption, that's a paraphrastic future, by all the Gentiles because of my name. So the Jews were to suffer terribly. We know that. There are some very important facts contained in the consistent translation. You, Y-O-U, when in capitals is plural. Now that's very important. This fact is usually not discernible when you is printed with small letters. The phrase, will be being hated, is a paraphrastic future. That is, it's going on continuously. The third thing to be aware of is that Jesus is speaking to Jews, not Gentiles. There are only two groups of people in the world, Jews and Gentiles. There are no Christians at present because these statements are made before the cross. Note and compare the following translations and see how the adversary has hidden the truth. So let's go over to that page and take a look at what's going on here. This is amazing. I enjoy doing this. I hope you enjoy studying it. I think you're going to have to go through this many, many times. There's a lot that I'm kind of sliding over, but I'm doing the best I can, but at the same time I'm pressured to get it within a reasonable number of cassettes. Now this is Matthew 24:9. Now look what they did. King James Version. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Now the Living Bible. Then you will be tortured and killed and hauled, hated all over the world because you are mine. Now see, they can twist these verses to look as though he's talking about Christians, today's English. Then you will be being arrested and handed over to be punished, be put to death. All mankind will hate you because of me. New International. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. You will be hated by all nations because of me. Then you get over to the Phillips Modern, you get into real troubles. For then comes the time when men will hand you over to persecution and kill you, and all nations will hate you because you bear my name. Well, then you see, that makes it look like you're talking about Christians. That's not true. He's talking about Jews. Revised Standard Version. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. That almost looks like the same thing, not quite as bad maybe. Jerusalem Bible. Then they will hand you over to be tormented and put to death, and you will be hated by all the nations on account of my name. And the last one, you will then be handed over for punishment and execution, and men of all nations will hate you for allegiance to me. Now, that's not right at all, see? all Jewry. He was talking to Jews. Just keep that in mind when you go back and look at that. On Matthew, back on page 21, he's talking to Jews before the crucifixion. He's not talking to Christian Jews. Not at all. He's talking to the Jews general. Now, how do you know all that? Well, look at Alfred's Greek Testament. And he's given us a phrase here we're going to need. Tota. At this time, during this period, not after these things happen, do not think that then means after. That will contradict Luke 12:21. Here it is. But before quite all these things, they will cast on upon you their hands. They will persecute, giving over into synagogues and guardhouses, being led upon kings and governors on account of my name. And you will be being hated by all because of my name. Now that's a continual thing. It started in 70 AD. It did not start back with Nebuchadnezzar in the Old Testament. It did not, because there had interruptions in the paraphrastic future. Will be being hated, cannot have an interruption by definition. So we've been going up to 91 so far, and it's been going on continuously. So following is an example of what translators have done with a very short parable. And I think you're going to enjoy this parable here in a minute. Jesus was speaking to crowds, not multitudes, as in the King James. You say, well, is that important? Oh, yes, very important. Why? Well, because he said, we'll come to it. It's coming in a minute. Seven other of our sample translations use crowds. Only the King James uses multitudes. See synonyms of the New Testament by Trench. Matthew 13. Thee Jesus spoke all these things in parables to the crowds, and separate from parable, he was not speaking to them. Now, you see why crowds is important? Whenever you have the word crowds, separate from parables, he was not speaking to them. So he was using parables constantly. So we know then that this is a parable that's given here in Matthew 5:13. Now look what happens to this one, because I'm sure this one is very common to you. You've heard it before. It isn't new. Here it is, King James. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden underfoot of men. Now that verse is violently altered. And we're going to take it up in a few minutes and probably have to turn over first. But just look at these here. Just skip across to Phillips. You are the salt of the earth, or the salt should become tasteless. Look at Revised Standard. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste. It doesn't say that in any text at all. It doesn't say all these. And you can read them. They're very similar in this case, almost alike, almost all copied from King James. So you can see what you're up against. But let me turn the tape there, and we'll begin 23, and then page 23, and then we'll explain it more.